You know, being brought up in Brixton in the 80s and 90s, you've got to have an element of, you know, you've got to be streetwise, you've got to be able to, you know, you've got to be able to know what you're doing. And certainly running businesses and running a business for nearly 20 years now, being able to overcome really, really difficult challenges and be resilient.
Well, welcome to Brave Bold Brilliant. I'm here today with Harry Hastings. Now, Harry is the co-CEO and co-founder of Ocean Holidays. Harry, how nice it is to see you on screen. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Thank you for having me, Jeanette. It's been a long time coming.
Honestly, it took us months to get this in the diary. We were trying, but this is all about perseverance and resilience, this podcast. So I think this is a good example of us actually managing to make it happen. So thank
Indeed,
you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. No, I've been looking forward to this, actually. So Harry, you've got an interesting journey, personally and professionally. Obviously, you know, you've got this amazing business. You're 20 years in now to Ocean Holidays. But how did you actually run up to that when you actually started the business 20 years ago? Talk us through a little bit about your earlier life and earlier journey before deciding to go into the crazy world of entrepreneurialism and starting your own business. What happened?
Well, funnily enough, I've never actually worked for anybody other than Ocean Holidays. I was a self-employed sales agent selling holidays off the teletext when I was about 18. And so was my brother, George. And we quickly realized that we were selling, you know, we're picking up the phones for all sorts of destinations. And, you know, you spend the same amount of time on a Benidorm holiday as you would a holiday to Florida. And these was back in the good old days of lots of charter flights to Sanford, Orlando. But you'd make five times as much commission if you sold a Florida holiday and, you know, took much less time. And back then there was Travel City Direct, part of Excel. Excel ended up failing with Excel, who had, you know, multiple jumbos and, naivety, you know, when you're young and naive, some of the best entrepreneurs come out of naivety, really. And I turned around to my boss and said, you know, why do you bother selling all these other destinations when you can just sell Florida and make five times as much margin? Of course, he'd run a very good travel company with lots of repeat clients and said, you know, I need to serve all my customers. And as a young 18-year-old, that didn't make much sense to me. And then George and I, along with Dave and Dan, who also are our business partners today, who were setting up another travel business separately, sort of began our journey with three teletext pages called Ocean Florida in January 2004. And we kicked off from there. And I'd been selling holidays off the teletext before that, probably no more than 18 months. I was about 19 when we first started pulling everything together. Yeah, and we went from there, and that, and obviously a hell of a lot has happened since January 2004 to today, and a lot of learning has had to go in, and certainly in those early years, those first 9-10 years up until the end of 2012 was a complete and utter roller coaster of learning and just making an enormous amount of mistakes. And I look back now and you know, I can't believe I made it as far as I made it to there and beyond. When you go back that early and you're that young and you're trying to, you know, learn as you go, it was a very, very interesting time.
Yeah. What were some of the things that stand out then, Harry, in terms of those learnings and you know, things that maybe didn't go so well that you might do slightly differently with hindsight, being you know, more experienced and older in the tooth that you are now, longer in the tooth, as they say?
Yeah, I think that many people that start businesses, not all, but many, many people that start businesses have a natural inclination to sales and marketing. And as a result of that, are naturally curious and optimistic and tend to always see the best and believe the best all the time. And I think typically in my experience over the years, you know, those who are fantastic salespeople and marketeers perhaps don't always have the best controls in place, the best administration in place, especially at a young age. And, you know, if I look back now to those first 8 or 9 years, 10 years, and I was talking to my younger self, I would most definitely have prioritized putting better controls in place, putting better processes in place. I remember talking to my uncle who I would describe as a sort of academic businessman. He's been on boards and a phenomenally successful academically as an economist, etc. And I remember I go for lunch quite often, and throughout the years he was, Harry, you've got to do all the boring stuff. And when you're in your early 20s, you just want to sell more holidays. You're not necessarily that interested in the boring stuff. And I think, fortunately, these days, I think since the onset of social media and learning and podcasts like this, it's actually incredible to watch so many people who are young entrepreneurs and doing so well, and they've got access to all this information where they can learn how to what to put in place and what technology is available to make sure that businesses are run exactly, not exactly how they should, but are run in such a way that they're more rounded. And in the early 2000s, I remember starting finance. I literally had one of those books on those the ledger books that I got from Ryman's, I think it was. And for the first couple of months, I was writing a ledger book until an accountant, showed me and helped me put together some spreadsheets, and I'm sure, somebody in their late teens, early 20s now, if they've watched this, is going to think that's absolutely bonkers.
But it's true though. When we're young, we're keen, a bit of naivety. But actually, that's not necessarily a bad thing, is it? Because so often, I think sometimes people overthink it as well, and so they never get started. They put it all, they're kind of, I've got to wait. I've got to have the perfect plan. I've got to have, the perfect proposition or whatever. And therefore, they spend so much time planning that they just don't ever get started.
No,
So,
exactly.
yeah.
Absolutely. We were completely mad at that point, looking back to think, Chuck, we raised £20,000 through, we sold a car. We had £5,000 on a credit card, and I think we had £8,000 of inheritance. And we bought a bunch of computers, hired an off sublet an office from a friend. 11,000 out of the 20,000 went on the three teletext pages, and we started selling holidays.
There you are, you see. That's brilliant. There were no barriers to entry, were
No,
there? So
there
get going.
weren't.
So talk about your younger life then, Harry, because travel is an industry that we both love, and I've spent, gosh, 30 odd years in the industry. I'm older than you, fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not sure which it is. But it's an industry that kind of gets into you, gets under the skin, it captures your heart, and people stay in it a very long time. And very often, there might be a trigger or something from earlier life, maybe family holidays or someone else in the family that was kind of in the industry that kind of inspired you. But did early life, your childhood growing up, was there any aspects from that that kind of naturally lent you to, one, coming into the travel industry, but two, becoming a business owner?
I think that if we look at my childhood and we go up to, when I was 18, 19 years old, both my parents were creatives, so they're both playwrights, and they never had full-time jobs. They weren't on PA. I don't think they ever got a PAYE payslip, in the 19 years, from me leading up to that age. So there's an element of self-employed confident stroke survival within the household. And I think that the idea of being self-employed or work or, and not working for somebody was a very natural thing for our household. And then I think when you combine that with personally, I was playing competitive sport from very, very young, so tennis and ice hockey, and then quit tennis to end up playing ice hockey. And ice hockey being a team sport, an incredible team sport. It teaches you resilience. It's full contact. You travel the world a lot. You travel around the world, because that's what you have to do when you're in the UK. There's not that many teams in the UK, and if you're fortunate enough to represent your country or a region of your country, you get to travel. And I think that ho hockey as a sport teaches you so much around discipline and about resilience and about different people from different backgrounds in a dressing room. And it's a really fast and difficult sport. And I certainly think that hockey and playing hockey, in the end, when I started the business, it was literally about 2 or 3 months after I'd quit playing ice hockey. So all of the energy that I put into playing ice hockey over the years, I think that as soon as that stopped, you know, I wouldn't miss a training session. I was captain of every team I ever played for. I was absolutely dedicated to it. And then as soon as I stopped, I started a business 2 or 3 months later. I think I stopped playing in the August and we were up and running, you know, the following January, something like that. So I think hockey played a huge part, but I don't think the individual sport actually, I think that can apply to anybody, whether that's football, American football, rugby. I do think it being a contact sport actually and being really, really tough does play a big part in it as well. And I look back, I think it's really interesting game. So, and then lastly, with my childhood, I was brought up in South London. I was brought up in Brixton, went to quite rough state schools, and was brought up in a very cosmopolitan area and very, very multicultural. And I lived a childhood, so lucky to have lived a childhood amongst so many different people from different backgrounds, with different experiences. And I think that's got to have played a part in terms of my interest in travel. I don't know what, but I think, you know, looking back, it's certainly, you know, you combine those three things. You've got self-employed playwrights, competitive team sport, and you know, a very multicultural upbringing. You sort of end up, I guess that's how you end up where I ended up. And then last but not least, it does help as well that, you know, being brought up in Brixton in the 80s and 90s, you've got to have an element of, you know, you've got to be streetwise. You've got to be able to know what you're doing, and certainly running businesses, and running a business for nearly 20 years now, being able to overcome really, really difficult challenges and be resilient. I think, you know, that having an up, being brought up where I was brought up certainly helps with that.
And the decision to stop playing hockey, was that a difficult one for you, Harry? Were you hoping to go down the professional kind of route? Was it tricky?
Yeah, so it's funny. My business partners, if they watch, will be laughing their heads off because I'm always talking about the glory days of ice hockey, and they tell me to be quiet. Look, I wasn't brilliant. I was good, and I got the opportunity to play in a playoff that summer, where in those days, most of the professional teams were full of imports. So only a couple of Brits made it through every year. And I was one of the Brits that got to play that summer. And I played 6 games in the playoffs that summer. And I wasn't one of the Brits that made it through. So then that was it. There was a lot of tears. It was all over. And then I moved on. But, you know, even if I had have made it, I wouldn't have played to make a living. It wouldn't have paid for a living. But interestingly, if I had played sort of semi-professional or UK type ice hockey, I definitely wouldn't have had time to run and start a business. So I probably, you know, with hindsight, would have ended up working a job that I didn't necessarily love because I wanted to play hockey.
You know, I love this. As you were talking, I was thinking, God, it's so true, isn't it? Sometimes there are things that happen, right, that we don't necessarily have full control over, and it can be a real kick in the nuts, yeah. Right? It can be at the time. And that might be personal, it might be a relationship ending, it could be all sorts of things, or I don't know, you get the boot from a job, you know, things happen, right? And it's not always a reflection of kind of what we've done. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But when you're in those really like terrible moments, you feel like the world's ending and, you know, you can't possibly see the, you know, the light out of it. But anyone that's listening now, you might be going through a really tough time. You might be, you know, you might have been made redundant. You might be suffering some personal stuff. You might have been rejected from something. But I think the key here is you've just done it. You've reframed it. You kind of went, well, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have necessarily gone down the route I've gone down. And actually, it's worked out fantastically well. So I think you know, to bounce back when you have a knockback is so important in life, in business, because
absolutely.
I think where people sometimes go wrong is that they don't expect the problems to come. Well, here's, you know, breaking news. There's going to be loads of problems that come along the way.
Well, we work in travel as well, Agent Ed, so it's, you know.
Exactly. You know,
often get told off from other people when you talk about other, when I said, you know, travel industry is tough. People say, oh, in other industries, you guys think you have it tough all the time. We all have it tough. I'm like, well, I don't know. Travel is difficult.
It is.
It's unpredictable.
It is. And, you know, I mean, certainly my earlier career, when I was in particular, when I was, I think when I got promoted to be product director at First Choice, and I was working with Peter Long, and Peter Long was an accountant, right? He's a finance background. Great. I mean, you know, godlike in the world of tour operating in terms of what he did with TUI, et cetera. But, you know, I remember Peter saying, you will never find a tougher trading environment. So yes, there's lots of, you know, if you're down the mines doing like tough like manual labor, or you're out, I don't know, on some of the oil rigs, that is tough. Yes, I get it. But I think the difference is in the travel industry is the margins are very thin. So, and you're prone to global shocks, you know, exchange rate, oil, fuel, global world, pandemic, 9/11. I mean, you name it, we've been through so ash cloud, you know, we've just had another, you know, Iceland's kicking off again. And, you know, you see all this stuff. So talking about that, Harry, being resilient in this industry, you have to be like a crocodile, don't you, with really thick skin?
Yeah, well, it's funny. You call it a crocodile. Sometimes I say to people, you know, about ocean holidays, I say, we're not a unicorn, we're a cockroach. And you drop all sorts of nuclear bombs on us, and we're still crawling through. So we're still, you know, and we're still doing a good job and serving our customers, and importantly, growing every year.
Yeah. Let's talk about ocean holidays a bit, Harry, because obviously, you know, a lot of people will know your fantastic, you know, business and organization. But for those that might not be so familiar, just give us a little bit of, you know, the highlights of what Ocean Holidays, you know, provides for the customers that you serve, and, you know, a little bit around what people can get from Ocean.
Yeah, the simplest way to think of Ocean Holidays is we're two direct to consumer brands. Ocean Florida, which is the largest Florida specialist of its kind in Europe. We send more people on package holidays to Florida than anyone that doesn't operate an airline. So other than BA, Virgin and TUI, we're sort of a leader in that. And Winged Boots as well is what we call personalized travel management that leads in luxury leisure followed by corporate. So rather than being a travel management company that leads in corporate travel, it leads in leisure. And then typically looks after the SME travel of a lot of its leisure clients. And I think what's where the two are aligned, and where what's common about the two, is that we're all about personal relationships with our customers, making travel and the travel experiences the best that they can possibly be through curating and handholding, offering expert specialist advice on whatever travel requirements that may be. And everything's offline in the sense that we have all of the tools and the technology of a typical OTA, for example, or a tech enabled travel business, but we don't enable we don't currently allow our customers to book online. It's all done with specialists. And then what underpins both those businesses is fantastic technology that we've built over the last 10 plus years. Daniel Ox, my business partner, oversees our tech strategy, and we've got what we believe to be a market leading CRM. We were we got best CRM at the Travolution Awards, I think, two years ago, and in addition to that, we've got our own wholesale ground wholesale business, Ocean Beds, which takes all of our ground stock and distributes that into Winged Boots and Ocean Florida. And then we do the same with a subsidiary, Ocean Flights, which does the same thing. So we've got this platform, if you like, that sits behind Winged Boots and Ocean Florida and drives it from a product and technology perspective. And then the outcome is that the customer hopefully has a fantastic experiences and gets great value at the same time. And then just last but not least, probably thinking, well, why on earth don't you make it online booking for your customers? Look, Ocean Florida's average order value is about £10,000, you know, five passengers, complex itineraries, villas, attraction tickets, car hires, multi-center, open jaws, multi-stop, etc. And Winged Boots is Average order value is north of £10,000, as well, and certainly on the leisure side is double, if not more. So, typically in this, in 2024, the market has not shifted so far as to book everything, to book everything online yet. So, whilst the technology is there, there is more than enough demand for people to have to people to want to book complex travel, expensive travel with somebody that they trust, and that's the concept, that's the foundations of the business at the moment.
Yeah, so it's very much a concierge kind of personal travel advisor model,
Certainly, yeah.
from
Full
what
winged
you
boots,
describe.
yeah. Full winged boots, and then Ocean Florida is lead generation, contact center, and but also a very personal service. And then we've got the Ocean Beds is also based in the US, so we've got a quasi DMC based in Orlando.
Yeah, brilliant. No, I love that. That's great to just explain the different facets of the business. Wing Boots, cool brand name. Where did that come from?
It's the Hermes, the Greek god flying around the world, and was done many, many years ago by a creative director who actually works for us now. So, and if you get the Winged Boots brochure, it's actually got where does the name Winged Boots come from. So, yeah,
There you are. I should have got
there
the
you are.
brochure and I would have found
Yeah,
out. But
they're like our lifestyle magazine. So I was reading it the other day. It's actually got that question in it, things you didn't know about Winged Boots. So, yeah.
fantastic, fantastic. No, that's great. So listen, Harry. You started the business. You've obviously got George, Dave, and Dan as the four co-founders. You and George, brothers, siblings. Is there any sibling rivalry, or do you get on like a house on fire? Because not easy working with family, right?
No, it's
Sometimes.
not. No, it's not. Look, first of all, it's our 21st year this year. So, we've been through a lot together, both personally and professionally. We've been to hell and back. We've all had our individual challenges over the years, and we've always supported each other. I think what's interesting about the four of us, and for anyone that's met us, is we're all very different characters, and we all bring different strengths and have different weaknesses, whether that's luck or the way that it's evolved from such a young age. I don't know, but I think that's been a blessing. And of course, we've had our bumpy patches. Of course, I wouldn't say sibling rivalry per se, but as we've all had to grow up in the business, we've inevitably had challenges. But I can honestly say being siblings hasn't isn't the cause of that, if you like. I can honestly, if anything, it's been our strength. I was listening to Brian Chesky, the Airbnb founder, the other day, and he made a good point that the day he realized that your business partners and your founders are like a marriage, and if you don't work on the relationship, it will fall apart. I think is very, very true. And we've done really well to work on our relationship as a four, and be honest with each other, have the difficult conversations, and be in regular contact. We've got a full exec team, and this week we've got a board meeting on Wednesday, but the four of us are going out for dinner this week just because it's healthy that the four of us keep doing that, even though we have a wider exec team.
Yeah, no, that's great. And you made a point around, when you started the business, it was very much, come on, couple of laptops, an idea, let's just get on with it and figure it out as we go along. Whereas now you're in a very different place. The business is a scale operation. It's, you've professionalized the whole thing over that time, as you'd expect. And you've got this, an executive board now. So all of the things that your lovely uncle was saying about, you've got to do the boring stuff, the governance and the meetings and the business reviews and the KPI deck and all that, the board pack and all of this kind of good stuff. Presumably, you're in a quite a different place in terms of systems, processes, and people now than when you started. What was the hardest thing, do you think, for you as a team or for you personally in that almost that scaling up? Right, we've got a business of scale now. We really need to kind of make sure those foundations are solid. We've got to do the boring stuff. How did that transition happen? Was it quite straightforward, or did you
No,
struggle?
I could talk about this all day long, and I think to try and keep it as succinct as possible, I put it in two areas in two time spans. So, we almost lost the business at the end of 2012 because of financial irregularities in the business. We had a partner at the time, and we lost control of the finances, and we relied on somebody who was looking after the finances, and we were running our separate areas of the business. It was well publicized at the time, and it was to the tune of 3.5 million quid, which was for a 25 million pound turnover business at the time. It was really, really, really difficult. That was when the four of us took full control of the whole business. We sold an OTA we had called beattherosha.com at the time so that we could focus on Ocean Florida and Wingboot. So I think that was the first time that we really learned a massive lesson about governance and financial controls and, running a proper grown-up business that gets all the boring stuff right. And that's when we hired our first our finance director, Chris Ford, who's still with us today. And that was at the end of 2012. I remember going back to that period. I was temporary finance director for about 6 weeks, and we worked all through the night and rescued the business. It was an amazing turnaround, and we took it from that point. It was a 20 before we'd sold Beat the Brochure. It was a 25 26 million pound turnover business. Without that, it was about 10, and we're now last year we posted 100 million, so we've times it by 10. That growth from the years of 2012 to 2020 was all about learning from those mistakes that we've made in the first 10 years. So we got a really difficult wake-up call on that front. So it's very harsh rather than an evolution, but it was the most amazing thing that could ever have happened to us. So I think that was the first thing about controls and governance and changes that we made over the last 20 years. I think the second thing, which has been really interesting for me as a leader and in terms of growing the business going forward and scaling the business going forward, is that around the 2019 mark and throughout the last 3 or 4 years, it's been about creating the right management team to take forward the business, and for people to be accountable and hold and be responsible for taking forward the elements of their business and making sure that we can create the best possible team we can to reach our vision and our goals and bring everybody at Ocean Holidays along with us. So, more recently we've officially promoted internally a product and commercial director, sales director. Externally, we've got a people director, taken on two advisors, which are sort of quasi NEDs, that are big industry backgrounds. And more recently, we're looking at a senior hire in technology as well. So building out that executive team in the last few years, I think, has been the second most important part of that journey, and then attaching it to, well, what are the goals of the business? What are we trying to achieve in the next, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years? What are the business priorities, and how are we going to take this together as a collective team? And it's important I say this as well. It's not just about the executive team. It's actually more about the people that work at Ocean Holidays, and then bringing everybody on the journey, and making sure everyone is a part of our collective success. And that is really, really difficult, but you get it right, and it's really sweet.
Yeah, and how would you describe the culture at Ocean, given that you've been on this journey and you started, family and close four of you? How's the culture? How would you describe it today?
I think we're very happy, fun culture. Everyone always says, I think people generally find us, nice and easy to do business with and easy to work with. But at the same time, we have very high expectations of our people and of each other, and have very high standards in terms of we try really hard to blend doing the right thing, acting with absolute integrity, but being laser focused on growth and making sure that we've got all of the right foundations to do that, and trying to get that blend right. Between the two, obviously has its challenges and makes it a really interesting place to work. So then what you have in terms of the culture is you have lots of different personalities and people who challenge each other, and I think that if you have a bunch of people in a room and everybody gets on really well and everybody agrees all the time, you probably don't have really intelligent people in the room. And I like to think in Ocean Holidays, people are constantly debating and constantly challenging one another, whether that be through evidence, data, and often just because it's the right thing or the wrong thing, or there isn't always a measurable answer to why you have to do something. So hopefully that gives a little bit off, but a lot of fun, a lot of smiles, but a lot of people challenging each other at the same time, I think would just about sum up the culture, I think.
Yeah, no, that's great. And like you say, you want the best environment. I mean, I always, with the businesses that I advise, I always say there's three aspects of any business. There's brave, leading yourself, you as an exec leader and kind of how you show up and being the best version of yourself. There's then bold, see what I'm doing here, leading the business, the strategy, the growth, the investment, all of that good stuff. And then the brilliant bit is the people. It has to be the people. And it's about high performing teams and how, every single person, whether you're the cleaner or the CEO, you all bring something to the table.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
I think leaving egos at the door and on all of that stuff and actually making sure that people have a voice and the right environment is so important. And I think you do that exceptionally well,
Yeah.
Harry, and you've won quite a few awards as well, haven't you? Let's talk about some of those.
Well, we were just fresh off the Travel Weekly Globes last Thursday, and that was a really, really, really big one. So last year at the Globes, we've won the special award, one of the special awards 2 years in a row. So last year was the first year for the Employer of the Year, which we won. And I don't know if you like the Globes, they have these special awards rather than the more traditional, long haul tour operator of the year. They have two or three special awards every year. So last year was Employer of the Year, which we're really grateful to have won. And then just last Thursday, first year again for this award, was the Travel for All. So we won the Travel for All award for our market leading accessibility program. We spent a year researching how disabled people in the mainstream part of our sector are just not being served as well as they should. There are either niche operators at the bottom end or airline owned operators that have to do it for for regulatory purposes, but no one in the middle is offering that is looking at this segment of customer and going, well, one in five people are disabled, and frankly, no one seems to care about whether or not they have a good experience. In if anything, it's the other way around. So we saw it as a big opportunity. Did a whole load of research on it. All the research told us that exactly what not exactly, but told us what we hypothesized. And a year later, we launched a project at the end of 2022. We've done. At the last count, more than £8 million worth of bookings. That was a couple of months ago now, in November, which is roughly 10%, just under 10% of our annual revenues. It's a lot, a lot of customers, over the course of 12 months. So really proud to have won that award up against Celebrity and TUI, so two big juggernauts. And I think what's interesting is, and I'm not going to compare us per se to other travel businesses. But why that's important that versus those two businesses is they're asset owned travel companies, and we're a service provider. We're reselling other people's services, and it's about saying making sure you do the best that you can do with the services, with the advice, with the information. That's the key to all this,
Yeah, and Harry, I know it's a very personal topic for you, with your son Rudy. So, do you want to talk about why it's so important for you? Obviously, important for the industry, and congratulations on the award. I think I agree with you. It's an underserved sector, and it, not only is it the right thing to do, actually, but commercially, it makes a lot of sense for businesses as well. So, you've got to be coming at it from all angles, because if all of that works, then you're going to do the best, aren't you? It's the right thing to do. But let's talk about why it's so personal for you, if you don't mind.
So my son Rudy, he's 4 in March. He was born on the 12th of March 2020, which was the day that Disney got shut down as well. So around COVID. So yeah, Rudy was diagnosed 6 months later with a rare genetic condition. So he's profoundly disabled. he's non-speaking, in a wheelchair stroke buggy, suffers with intractable epilepsy, so he's got these challenges with seizures. Generally speaking, he's the most beautiful, happy boy. First couple of years health wise was very difficult, especially you know, as access to services wasn't normal between 2020 and sort of last year really. And the accessibility project kind of started coincidentally at the same time, but as I got to travel more with Rudy, I started to realize how difficult travel was for those with disabilities, and some of the barrage of difficulties that you get, and the small things that happen to you all the time when you're traveling, as well as the really big things as well. You know, I traveled back from Mallorca last week, and our buggy got lost because a wheelchair, our buggy got lost and got stuck with the baby chairs. Somebody had a pop at me for jumping the queue because they didn't realize, you know, that Rudy was disabled, and we were trying to go through the queue. And you have all these things which you must stay positive about, but are a real challenge. And unless you do it all with a smile on your face, which is really hard, traveling with a disability, whether it's visible or not, is very, very difficult. And so, yes, it is it's a personal subject for me, absolutely. And fortunately for Ocean Holidays now, I've got lots of experience. So I'm always feeding back, by the way, this, by the way, that. And we're always improving our program as a result.
And it must have been incredibly difficult for you, Harry, as an individual, as a father, but as a family, you know, with your wife and the whole family, when you obviously got a diagnosis for Rudy. How did you cope through that time? You know, you're trying to run a business, we're in the middle of COVID, which was like demanding anyway for everyone, and you're also having to kind of process and go through the whole emotional cycle of finding, you know, finding out where you're sitting personally with your little boy.
Very, very difficult. You know, it was the up until May 2023, which was when all restrictions to the US were removed, and 85% of our business is to the US. And Rudy's health really started to be vastly improved because of his diet, actually, which is another thing. We moved away from these sort of chemical, these tube fed sort of chemical shake things to real food, real blended food. And I would say in the spring of last year, I had 3 years of being in an absolute survival mode, living in a form of crisis. And how I did it, I don't know. I look back now and I think, wow, you know, we doubled the size of Ocean Holidays. Rudy got his health. You know, me and my wife are still together and happy, everything is intact. And I think that you just kick in, don't you? I think humans adapt in the most extraordinary way, and it's a cliche, but it's how you respond and how you react to the things that are thrown at you that is so much more important than the things themselves that happen to you. And I think that, you know, when I look back at the last 3 or 4 years, yes, I've made so many mistakes, of course, but trying to stay optimistic, you know, going back to that Harry in his early 20s, when, you know, that pure optimism and curiosity I mentioned there about diet, you know, we found that out for ourselves, having been eternally optimistic and curious and making sure that, you know, you're looking after yourself, but also looking after everybody around you, and just trying to be the best person you can possibly be, and just head down and keep going. And there will be a light at the end of it in the end. And you just have to have faith that light will be there. We all go through really difficult things in life. We all have cycles of ups and downs. And if we can't live the best life we can through the downs, then what's the point? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, honestly, well, thanks for sharing, Harry, because I know it's tough. It's you've been through hell and back, but you're out the other side, which is amazing. And hopefully Rudy will, you know, continue to flourish and be the beautiful little boy that he is, you know.
It's, yeah, and his health is fantastic now, and he's a very, very happy, smiley boy. It's difficult. Don't get me wrong, it's very, very difficult. All of his personal needs need to be taken cared for, feeding, moving around, little tiny little gestures or facial expressions that mean certain things that no one else would know. His care, planning his care, all that stuff is not difficult, and it's not going anywhere. But he's a beautiful, lovely little boy, and all I would say is that you adapt, and you surprise, you adapt in a surprising way, I think.
Yeah, I guess, it's the human spirit was probably stronger than we realize we are. We give ourselves credit for, and when you need to dig deep, hopefully
Indeed.
it's there. What advice would you give maybe Harry to kind of other people that might be facing, not the same situation, but similar challenges maybe with children that have got some, challenges that are happening? How can you share your experience to help others? What advice would you give?
Wow, that's a difficult one. I think the biggest advice I would give is that, and so many families with special needs children know this. So I'm to anyone with special needs, any special needs parents out there, I'm sure I'm preaching to the converted on this. But you know your children better than anybody. Any doctor, any expert, any specialist, anyone that gives you advice, you know them better than anybody else, and have confidence and belief in what you know. I think that's first and foremost. And then secondly, the way to get that confidence and belief is to ensure that you educate yourself and you're learning, and you're just like you would. Just like you would learn to do your job better, learn about your kid's condition. The more information you have, the better. Because ultimately, especially in Rudy's case, where it's a rare genetic condition, less than 100 in the world. When he's diagnosed, we knew of less than 100 in the world ever. Full stop. The reality is, no doctor or expert is going to know enough about that condition to be able to give you any sort of advice or anything like that. And then once you have all that information, you know what you're dealing with, then you can plan your life around it, and you can do your very, very best with the resources that you've got. And if you don't have enough resources, which none of us really do at any one time, just ask for help. People want to help and look around you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you, Harry. That's a wonderful advice. So, yeah, and I guess if people want to maybe, share, contact you and maybe, just share experiences, like that often it's just having a safe pair of ears to listen.
Absolutely. I bumped into an old travel colleague at the Globes last Thursday, and he said, "Harry, I've been meaning to get in touch. My son's got special educational needs, different from yours, but pretty severe. And I just haven't got in touch with you. So lovely to see you." And we exchanged emails today. I'm having lunch with him in a few weeks' time. We've not spoken for years, probably a decade.
Yeah, well, there you go. You see the power of connections, right? And the human to
Indeed.
human contact, right? That's so important. Yeah, wonderful. Well, and Harry, in terms of, what's next for you? What's next for the family? What's next for Ocean Holidays? What's the exciting roadmap ahead? Because it feels to me like the best is yet to come for you guys.
Yeah, I'll start with family quickly, and then go. Yeah, we'll hopefully grow our family. We're now in a stable position with Rudy, and youngish parents, just turned 40. So it would be fantastic for him to have some siblings and see where that goes. And I think from a business perspective, look, I'm not going to sit here and talk about COVID, and everyone's bored of COVID as far as travel's concerned. But we sell 85% to the US, and the US was one of the last nations worldwide to remove all restrictions last May 2023. And when you put that into context against some of the countries like, I think Iran and Niger and countries that aren't tourism friendly, they're the ones that were next to the list of the countries that remove restrictions next to the US. And we are just delighted now that we can run our business how we were running it pre-pandemic. Somehow we managed to navigate the pandemic in such a way that we doubled the size of the company. You know, we've doubled the revenue from 2019 to 2022, and that's a phenomenal achievement. And for 2023 and now into 2024 and beyond, it's saying how do we, you know, retain all those customers that we've now acquired, and then how do we scale it up and take it to the next step? You know, our vision really is to be the leading long haul luxury travel provider in Europe, and now it's about doubling down on, you know, where our strengths are, and I think really, really going for it in the next couple of years. Whether we stay founder led, owner managed during that process, I'm not 100% sure, because we've got big, bold and brilliant ambitions, and we're probably going to need a partner to join us on that journey, I imagine.
Yeah, I know, that's fantastic, but it's exciting, isn't it? I mean, huge congratulations to double the size of the business during that incredibly difficult time is phenomenal. You know, I don't think there are many businesses that could claim that in our Right. industry or in other industries. So, yeah, you rightly should feel incredibly proud of that. And, you know, as you say, the road ahead is really positive. So exciting. We should all be watching with great anticipation. We'll have to have you back on, Harry, in a couple of years, and we can have the part two of the podcast and see where you're landing. I'm going to come to a few last questions, Harry, if I may. But before I do that, where can people find you? What's the best way to kind of connect with you? Either, you know, the team at Ocean Holidays, you personally, what's the way that people can track you down?
Yeah, LinkedIn's always a good one. Yeah, you know, connect with me on LinkedIn with a message. We all get loads of messages on LinkedIn these days. So maybe put in the subject header, brave, bold, brilliant. But LinkedIn's always a good way to connect. So directly with me as well, for sure.
Fantastic. Well, we'll put all the details in the show notes and everything so that people can track you down there as well. So if you're watching this on YouTube or if you listen to it on the podcast, you will be able to track Harry down, no problem at all. So that's great. So Harry, obviously, it's been every year's a big year, I think, for you, by the sounds of it, in one way or another. But if you look back at the last year in particular, can you think of, you know, one word that would describe that year and why?
Yeah, we've used it a lot today, and it's a common word. I think that for me personally, and I'm sure many people in the last couple of years, resilience is the first thing that comes to mind. I have had to be incredibly resilient. Ocean Holidays has had to be incredibly resilient. My family has had to be incredibly resilient. And we've overcome, you know, genuinely the last 3.5 years were the most challenging of my life. So I can't think of any other word that would sum that up.
Yeah, perfect. No, I think that is a very apt description for sure. And Harry, you've you know, very graciously shared lots of advice as we've been chatting, which is wonderful, because that's what we like to do with the podcast, just share ideas and support, etc. But you'll have had loads of advice yourself over the years, maybe some of it good, some of it not so good. But can you think of a standout piece of advice that's, you know, held you in good stead?
Yeah, it's, I don't know if you call it direct advice, but it's a quote which a phenomenally successful businessman once said to me, which was that good judgment, always remember that good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. And I think that in the context of growing businesses, and in the context of, you know, people talk a lot about failing fast and learning from your experiences, you know, I always come back to that, which is that, you know, good judgment comes from experience. Experience comes from bad judgment, which in other words means, you know, don't be afraid to make mistakes. But when you do make mistakes, make sure you learn from them, and you put that in your bank of experience, and that will take you a long way. As long as you keep doing that day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, I think that's definitely the best advice I've ever had. And it's something that I come back to all the time.
Yeah, fantastic. I love that. Well, brilliant. I'm going to start applying that myself.
It was on the wall. It's on the wall in their house. Good judgment comes from experience. Experience comes from bad judgment.
Amazing. Amazing. Fantastic. So, Harry, when we talk about brave, bold, brilliant, what does that mean to you?
I think brave, bold, brilliant to me is about being relentlessly focused on what you're trying to achieve, and unreasonable almost about it, but at the same time doing it in such a way that you're doing it with high integrity and you're always trying to do the right thing, and stopping yourself, you know, when it comes to making decisions that have, for example, short-term returns but long-term, you know, problems. And I think more than ever in this current environment, or the environment we've all been in the last 4 or 5 years, everyone's been in some sort of crisis at one time or another, and the best leaders that come out of crisis are the ones that make the really difficult decisions in a crisis, but they don't do it just through a short-term lens. They do it thinking about the long term, but importantly thinking about whether it's the right thing to do for people and the right thing to do for, you know, community, your community, or for society, or whatever it might be. That would be the summary when I think about Brave, Bold, Brilliant, because that's the hardest thing to do when you're in the most difficult situation. But in the end, the results are the best and you're happier.
Thank you. Wow, what an answer. I love that. Harry, the perfect way to finish the podcast. Thank you for coming on. You are most definitely brave, bold, brilliant yourself. So thank
thank
you very
you.
Much.
Don't know about that, but thank you.
I really hope you've enjoyed Brave, Bold, Brilliant. Don't forget to subscribe and share with all your friends. And if you've enjoyed listening, I'd love it if you'd leave me a 5-star review.